The Bible is filled with stories of family intrigue and sibling rivalries. It's full of conflicts among people that are made all the more heated because those who are involved are so close to one another. Arguments made all the more venomous because the people engaged in this conflict value the same things. They want the same things. They come from the same flesh. They worship the same God. There was Cain and Abel, the very first children born of humankind. Brother came to murder brother over the question of who would be favored by God. They both wanted the same thing. Only one would get it. Then there was Jacob and Esau, twins born mere moments from one another who would fight for decades over who would be the true heir to their family's legacy. They both wanted the same thing. Only one would get it. Then there was Rachel and Leah, two sisters who burned with jealousy, each desiring what the other sister had. Between them, battling for years over who would prove to be the matriarch of their family. Both wanted the same thing. Only one would have it. The Bible is filled with family intrigues and sibling rivalries, conflicts among people that are made all the more heated because those who are involved are so close to one another, because they value the same things. They come from the same flesh. They worship the same God. And what is at stake? What is at stake is nothing less than their identities, who they are and what their lives mean in the world. This brings us to the very beginning of the Gospel of John, when this same story, this old story of family intrigue, seems poised to repeat itself again. This time, the roles in the family intrigue are held by two cousins who were born just a few months apart, both extraordinary people. One was named John, called the Baptizer. The other was named Jesus, who came from Nazareth. And they were so similar that people would sometimes mistake one for the other. So similar did they look, born just a few months apart, cousins. Both of them were born under strange circumstances. John was born to a mother who was advanced in age, and who, even when she was young, had never been able to bear a child. Jesus, for his part, was born of a very young woman, a woman who, it was said, was a virgin when Jesus was born. Both devoted their lives to serving God. Both would attract huge crowds who would listen to them teach about God, who would hang on their every word. Both would attract from among these crowds devoted disciples, people who chose to dedicate their lives to trying to live up to the example of their teacher. Both would have people come to them and ask them point blank, "Who are you? Are you the Messiah?" They would ask John. "Who are you? Are you the Messiah?" They would ask Jesus too. The stage is set for a story as old as humanity itself to play itself out again. A conflict between cousins about who will prove to be the Messiah. and who will finish second, which is to say, finish last. And we who have read the story, we know how the story will end. Because John was not the Messiah. His cousin, his younger cousin, Jesus, was the Messiah. The Bible is full of these kinds of stories. And they do not end well for the runner-up. They're sad stories. They're stories about people losing their identities, losing their families, losing their faith, losing their lives. But the story of John the Baptizer and his cousin, the Messiah, this story does not end the way the other stories of family intrigue do. John will not spend his life chasing after something that will forever elude him, something that is not his to grasp. He will not spend his life growing bitter at his cousin Jesus and what might have been if only. John the Baptizer does not succumb to jealousy, but instead finds his own way, claims his own role, finds the meaning of his own life, the purpose of his days. And the heart of that work, what sets him apart from Cain or Esau or Leah, what makes all the difference so that his story does not end in tragedy? The difference is humility. Humility is what makes John the Baptist who he is. It makes him a witness to the light rather than a pretender to the throne of the Messiah. You can hear it. You can hear this tension, how it rests on a knife edge, what will happen to John. You can hear it. In the gospel reading today, it reads, "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. John testified to him and cried out, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.'" You can hear the tension in the story of who John the Baptist will be. John is not the light of the world. It is humility that empowers him to be the very first person to testify to the light. John is not the truth that will set people free. It is humility that empowers him to be the very first person set free by that truth. John is not the Messiah. Humility empowers him to be the very first witness to God's plan for salvation for the world. Humility is John the Baptizer's greatest strength. Humility is how he came to be the first and perhaps the greatest of all the servants of Jesus Christ. From the story of John and his rather famous cousin, learn this lesson, that humility is not a self-effacement. It is not a kind of self-effacement, an erasure of yourself or a denial of who you are and what you are called to do. For few in the Bible have had a clearer sense of self than did John the Baptizer. Neither is humility a kind of meek acceptance of whatever may come. No, humility is not a meek acceptance, for few in the Bible were as possessed of as wild and untamed a ferocious fight against the injustice of what is than was John the Baptist. Do not be mistaken about humility. Humility is not a milquetoast quality of weak people. Humility is strength. It is a source of strength as well as its demonstration. In humility, there is a sure and certain defense against slander or lies. There is a certain defense against slander or lies in humility, and that is because humility is to know yourself truly, without deception. It is to know yourself truly and to be yourself, which does not require anyone's approval and which cannot be taken away from you by words. In humility, too, there is a sure defense against self-importance, because humility is knowing who you are without deception and being proud of that, without the need to wish that you were someone else. Humility allows us even to be a part of dreams that would be far too extravagant for even the most self-absorbed person to imagine. Who among the self-seekers would ever say of their life, "My life is devoted to furthering God's purpose in the world, and I have done it"? It would be the height of arrogance. And yet, humility allows us to see that we are called to live our lives as a part of God's plan for the world. The plan is not ours. We alone and our work are not the only ones that shall make it come to pass. But still, our part is ours to play. God has called us into it. And so we may, with our lives, do the very work of God through humility. It allows us even to call other people to this same path, welcoming those who do not think like us or look like us or pray like us to come alongside and be a part of working on a plan that is greater than what anyone could accomplish, far beyond what any one mind could encircle. With humility, the whole world and its outlook changes before us. In humility of understanding that our own worldview is limited, the world becomes filled not with enemies who are enemies because they are different from us and therefore enemies, but rather the world is filled with allies who are strong because they are not the same as us and bring strengths of their own to bear. If any of us will ever, with the work of our lives, spread abroad the message that God's love has been made real, then we are merely following in the footsteps of John the Baptizer. We are following in the footsteps of one whose humility meant that he did not try to be something he was not, but by knowing who he is, found himself in these words. He could find himself in these words, that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light, the true light, which enlightens everyone, and was coming into the world. Because of humility, John the Baptizer did not go the way of so many in the past who through envy lost their chance to be themselves. Instead, John the Baptizer could find himself as a part, just a part of the story, but a part of a story that would change the world. May we all have a bit of the humility of John the Baptizer.